Welcome to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a coalition of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. I'm Maeve Conran, the coalition's managing editor, and today, documenting women's history in the Rocky Mountain West.
When you're doing studies on women, it's much more difficult than the men just because they were not recognized as much back then.
An effort to increase diversity in nursing.
Diversity is a lot of different things, but essentially trying to match our nurses to what the overall population is so that we can better serve our patients.
Making art more accessible for people with disabilities.
We want to create this place where we can accelerate the voices, we can elevate the voices of individuals with disabilities who are artists.
And a new book of poetry about broken hearts.
I lie motionless in my bed, save for the swipe of my finger, hoping to catch a glance of a stranger turned to a friend turned lover, a lover turned back to a stranger.
From Rocky Mountain Community Radio, it's the Regional Roundup. March was Women's History Month, but tracing the history of women in this region is not always easy. Larry MacDonald of the Gunnison Pioneer Museum spoke about those challenges and also spoke about what he found out with Kate Ginnap on KBUT.
I found through my research of history, not only here in the Gunnison Valley, that when you're doing studies on women, it's much more difficult than the men just because they were not recognized as much back then. And although we had over 50 different newspapers published in the Gunnison area, it's hard to come by stories on the ladies. They were definitely referred to as the wife of, right, or those few that didn't marry. You can manage to dig up them. It's a little easier to find information.
Yeah, no, I thought that was so interesting to point out that, you know, women's history is hard to dig up.
Not a lot of photos in collections. I mean, it was a male dominated world in the late 1800s here.
Yeah. So what were you able to dig up?
Well, we can't really talk about our female history here in Gunnison County without first mentioning Chipeta, the wife of Chief Uray. Yeah. And she was born in 1843 and married. She wasn't the only wife of Chief Uray, but she was the most renowned wife of Chief Uray. And she was called the Queen of the Utes. She married when she was less than 20 years old there. And unfortunately, Uray passed in 1880, just after signing that final treaty that moved them from our Los Pinos Indian Reservation over towards the new reservation, which is located near Montrose. But she lived for 44 years after Chief Uray passed away. And during that time, a part of it, she returned to her native Ute roots, on occasion going back to live on a reservation in a tent. And then at other times, she would be feted a famous person quite often. So when the Gunnison Tunnel opened in 1906, she actually rode in the same car as President Taft during the grand opening ceremonies. And she was quite well known throughout the United States during that time. She had traveled back to Washington, D.C. and met presidents and other folks, celebrities. She was treated like a celebrity during her time in Washington and on occasion when she came back to Colorado. So we really can't skip over Chipeta. And she is well recognized at the Montrose Ute Museum with her own spring there. And she is actually buried. Her remains are there also. So we can't talk much about our history without mentioning her first. And then another renowned resident of our valley was Captain Ellen Jack. Hmm. And Captain Ellen Jack was quite an independent lady. Her husband had passed away, and he was a naval captain, and she took that title of captain on. She was a partner in the Black Queen Mine, which was located in Crystal near Marble.
Okay.
And she ended up selling that mine for $25,000 back in that day. And you can multiply that about 30 times to get an equivalent dollar amount for today. She was in Gunnison for a number of decades, and she ran a boarding house that right behind the current Gunnison Arts Center. She owned a half block back there, a boarding house and a restaurant. She named it Jack's Cabin, just to be confusing with the other Jack's Cabin, which was originally called Howeville, which is between here and Almont. So Captain Ellen Jack was quite handy with a pistol. Whenever a fella tried to get fresh with Captain Jack, they might happen to lose a finger or two. She was an excellent shot, very independent. There's a story of her coming over Schofield Pass into Crested Butte on her own in a blizzard.
Wow.
And that's how tough of a lady she really was. She had some run-ins with our law enforcement throughout the valley, but she was well respected. And she in the historic Gunnison newspapers, it indicates that she was very involved in beautification of the Gunnison Valley.
Wow.
She tore down shacks that were on her property and replaced them with new ones. And she was very involved in growing greenery around her residence there to help beautify Gunnison, which is a pretty neat deal.
Yeah.
She did leave Gunnison in the late 1800s, and she ended up living on High Drive in Colorado Springs for a long time, and it became a tourist destination where she would invite people to take pictures. She really was like a selfie queen way back in the early 1900s here.
Wow.
But Captain Ellen Jack, one of the most renowned women in Colorado history, was a resident of our valley also. Unfortunately, Miss Marcella Doyle comes up quite often. And she was one of the few survivors of the Woodstock avalanche that occurred 140 years ago this month near Pitkin, above Pitkin and below the Alpine Tunnel. The avalanche was triggered by trains leaving Woodstock heading up to the Alpine Tunnel, and the vibration in the deep snow triggered the avalanche, which roared down from above and wiped out the town of Woodstock. And Mrs. Marcella Doyle survived that while six of her children died, and they were ages 10 to 23, and they were all working at the boarding house and restaurant. The two oldest were boys, and they actually worked for the railroad at that time. And one of the boys was engaged to be married to Celine, another woman that did survive the avalanche. They had to dig out both her and Miss Marcella Doyle.
Wow.
13 people lost their lives there. They didn't find the two of the men until later that summer in June and July up there. Miss Marcella Doyle, survivor, she moved back to Golden, which was her original home, and lived out her life there. Another intriguing and infamous group of gals in our county history are the Vidal sisters. Mm. They were called the Girls in the Overalls, and they were featured in a 1902 silent short film. And this is at the very earliest days of motion pictures. And a gentleman, a Colorado native by the name of Harry Buckwalter, a famous photographer, he made one of his earliest motion pictures of these gals ranching. What had happened is their father had passed away with the ranch heavily in debt. Their ranch was up Ohio Creek Valley. and left them in debt. And a mother passed away 2 years later, so they had no parents anymore. And the girls took on the duties of ranching, putting on overalls while wearing lipstick and fancy shoes. And the photo shoots and the film were all showing that they could be beautiful while still doing the hard work of ranching. And that's they ended up selling the ranch a few years later. Wow. But their claim to fame was the early 1900s when their film was shown all over the United States and far beyond.
Larry MacDonald of the Gunnison Pioneer Museum speaking with KBUT News Director Kate Knapp on a special show for Women's History Month. You can find the entire interview at kbut.org. A new nursing program at Fort Lewis College in Durango is aiming to tackle an increasing problem in healthcare, a lack of diversity. KSUT Tribal Radio's Sarah Flower has more.
How many future nurses do we have in the room?
That's President of Fort Lewis College, Tom Stridicus, honoring the very first class of the CU Nursing Fort Lewis College Collaborative, a celebration for the revamping of Skyhawk Hall. The $2.9 million state-of-the-art nursing training facility is expected to be ready by June of 2025. Maggie LaRose is the director of nursing at Fort Lewis College. She says this collaboration between FLC and the University of Colorado College of Nursing at Anschutz Medical Campus is aimed at diversifying nurses in the healthcare field.
Our goal is increasing representation across the board, right? So for nursing, it really isn't a very diverse workforce. And so really, research after research has proved that, you know, we are a really trusted profession, and it's important for that trust for us to have diversity. It improves patient outcomes. And so what that diversity is a lot of different things, but essentially trying to match our nurses to what the overall population is so that we can better serve our patients.
The 5,000 square foot renovation will include three different teaching environments, a home-like setting, a clinical setting, and a simulation lab with three high-definition mannequins. This past fall, FLC welcomed the first cohort of 24 potential nurses. Students who complete their four-year degree on the Fort Lewis College campus will then receive their final degree from CU. LaRose says degrees will be jointly branded, referencing the Rural and Indigenous Health Program from Fort Lewis College. Megan Grush is a first-year student at FLC and is in the inaugural cohort program. Grush is a member of the Tlingit tribe from the Pacific Northwest. She's excited to lead the way for other students to follow.
The older siblings of this program were the guinea pigs. Things are getting tested out on us, and it's a good way to learn what's going to work and what isn't going to work these first years so that those that come after us can succeed more based off of what we were able to figure out what was not working.
This collaboration has been over 10 years in the making, and both institutions say they are committed to serving underrepresented and Indigenous students. In 2018, the U.S. Government Accountability Office studied employment data from Indian Health Services, showing that there are not enough healthcare providers in the IHS service area to provide quality and timely healthcare to Indigenous people. The first graduating class for this program will be in 2028. Reporting for KSUT Tribal Radio, I'm Sarah Flower.
You're listening to the Regional Roundup from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. I'm Maeve Conran. Accessibility in the arts is the aim for a nonprofit in Utah as they encourage their artists with disabilities to rebel in joy. Here's KRCL's Nick Burns and Laura Jones with more.
Art Access is, we're turning 40 years old this year, which is kind of exciting, and it's very mind-blowing. But Art Access is this little nonprofit in Salt Lake City, Utah, and our mission really is to increase accessibility in the arts to artists with disabilities and also to create educational opportunities for cultural organizations and community organizations. And so we really do that through a number of programs. The two big programs that we have are our Partners Program, which is a mentoring program where we pair an artist with a disability with a professional artist. And over the course of about 7 months, they get to develop professionally and sort of expand upon their talents. And then that culminates in an exhibition. And then the other program we have is our Artist Working Group. And that's where we get to pair six artists with disabilities up over the course of about 7 months. They get to work together exploring topics around disability and some other culturally relevant topics. So we've had the artists come together and explore the ideas of disability and the environment. What happens when the lake dries up, and how does that affect disproportionately individuals with disabilities? Another topic that they've covered is disability and socioeconomic status. But this year, we thought we would cover the topic of disability and joy. And joy is often not necessarily associated with disability sometimes. And so oftentimes we think about joy as being a rebellious act, sort of in this culture where the stereotype might be that somebody with a disability can't experience joy or have joy in their lives. But for a lot of us, myself included, as somebody who has a disability, joy is just kind of a part of living. And so we want to explore that.
You've been around for 40 years, which is pretty exciting. But that's, I think, out of many people's consciousness. There's artists, and then there are people who are disabled. But what you're doing is sort of breaking down a barrier that I think a lot of people don't even recognize exists.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think what we're really trying to do here is we're not trying to be inspirational by any means. I think that's something that, you know, as somebody in the disability community, we often hear that term like inspiration porn. And we don't want to necessarily do that. But what we do want to do is we want to create this place where we can accelerate the voices. We can elevate the voices of individuals with disabilities who are artists. And maybe their disability informs their work. But maybe they just want to create amazing art.
Maybe they just paint.
Maybe they just paint, or maybe they're filmmakers, or maybe they're musicians. And so we want to try to find and create these opportunities for these incredible artists, try to get them out and have a voice at the table in our community.
I have talked with people who think their disability has made them better.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Maybe special isn't the right word, but that they are better for having a disability.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I often think about that in my own life. I was in a rock climbing accident 27 years ago, and I have people constantly ask, if you could go back and do it again, would you? And I often say yes, because the person I am now, even though that event was so traumatic, I feel like I'm a better person because of it. And so we want to honor what their story is, regardless of what that story is. If they want to feel special, that's fine. That's totally up to them. They can have that narrative. If they want to inspire through their art, that's great. We are not going to dictate that. Yeah. What we do want to do is provide this incubator.
I guess I have a question for you as we wrap this. You said to us in the lobby that you were feeling disconnected from your own disability community, and that's when you decided to join Art Access in 2023. What about that joy for you? Have you found that connection? Have you reconnected?
Absolutely. I think for me, it was having this isolation moment during the pandemic. I'm sure that happened for a lot of people where they started to rethink their lives. And I was going, you know, I really need to get reconnected with my disability art community. And it actually turns out that right before the pandemic, I went to see the premiere at Sundance at Crip Camp.
And
there was a panel discussion after the film, and the then executive director of Art Access, Chandra Benito, she was on the panel, and I made a mental note. I said, yeah, I need to somehow get involved with Art Access. And then, of course, the pandemic happened, and I started to really think about what I wanted to do, and this job came up for program manager, and I thought, you know, I'm going to do a complete career shift. And I'm going to go and I want to work in the arts and I want to work with individuals with disabilities, because as an artist with a spinal cord injury, I sometimes feel disconnected from this world of artists and seeing artists who have stories to tell and have disability lives. And so this has been a chance for me to reconnect and to see other people. Maybe we don't all have the same disability, but to see how they create art, what they do to make those accommodations for themselves, how that disability, that disabled life informs their artwork. And for me, it's great because I just feel like this camaraderie with this community in it. And it just makes me happy that these voices are getting heard and seen and appreciated.
That's Stan Clausen of Art Access talking with Nick Burns and Laura Jones of KRCL in Salt Lake City. And you can find the entire interview at krcl.org. Just look for Radioactive. Heartbreak, that thing of sorrow and loss, has united a group of poets in mountain and adventure towns across the West. Their work is collected in the anthology Poems for Ex-Lovers, which recently released its third volume of Heartbreak Poems. KOTO's Gavin McGough spoke with some of the collaborators on the project.
Imagine working through heartbreak, up late at night, wondering about that person no longer by your side.
I lie motionless in my bed, save for the swipe of my finger, hoping to catch a glance of a stranger turned to a friend turned lover, a lover turned back to a stranger, silently waiting for sleep to take me away. Yeah, that was a fun one. Well, maybe not fun, but definitely that one felt good for sure.
That's Motionless, a poem by Telluridian Matt Zaremba, which is included in Volume 3 of Poems for Ex-Lovers, an anthology of anonymous works collected from a community of broken-hearted writers flung across mountain towns in the West. The editor, compiler, and designer of this latest volume is Emma Renly, who is based in the Pacific Northwest and here in the Four Corners region. Renly and Zaremba sat down with Kodo News to chat about this latest volume of Poems for Ex-Lovers and the peripatetic community of writers who brought it about.
So Volume 1 took place almost entirely in Moab, Utah. And then the second book took place in Telluride, Colorado, right here. And this is where Matt also kind of came onto the project.
And Matt, so was this your first foray into poetry writing?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about it on the way over, just writing these poems where, like, you have heartbreak or you have some sort of these pent-up feelings. It was, for me, it was almost like a purge or a cathartic letting go of everything that had maybe been pent up and built up, and then just kind of moving forward. It was actually a really good release. It was nice.
Are you writing right now? Have you continued to write poetry?
No, I'm actually very happy right now. I have a loving girlfriend of almost a year and a half, and I've tried to write happy poems, but it's almost like I don't want to lose or purge those feelings that I had when I was writing sad poems. So I kind of want to stay in the moment. I still want to stay in the happiness and not lose that feeling.
So this, in this third book, the kind of collection, the community of writers is wider spread than in the first two editions. What ties all of these kind of soul-searching people together?
I think the common thread, other than myself, I'd like to think, is that we all come from these very small mountain outdoorsy towns, whether it be Telluride, whether it be Moab, Jackson Hole, Hood River, Bozeman, even San Diego. And I think that leads to a lot of different experiences in terms of love and loss.
Yeah, interesting.
We do live in these very extreme towns, and perhaps that also pulls out extreme emotions too. You know, the pendulum swings quite strongly in one direction or the other. And I think, like Matt was saying, you're going to see your ex or person that you used to be intimate with in town like these. And so I think the emotions are much more up close and you can't ignore them.
talk about the decision to keep these poems relatively anonymous.
And you're reading the book, it's kind of great. You kind of attach, I guess, yourself to the poem. Like, you think of your own kind of interactions with other people and make, oh, this poem really resonates with me, even if I don't know who wrote it. Because, like, you start thinking about other people, interactions that you've had in the past. And at least that's how it kind of feels for me. So,
all right. So for all these heartbroken writers, what's next for them? Is there more heartbreak? Is there a volume 4?
I absolutely want to do another book of, you know, collective work of anonymous poetry. No more ex-lovers. This is the third book we've done. Please, like, we're over it. and you mentioned, you know, soul searching and outdoor towns, and I'd love to, like, perhaps look more into that theme of, like, the concept of, like, why do we travel? What is home? Is it a place? Is it a person? Is it a community? And so that's still being kind of divvied out in my brain and hopefully going to brainstorm with some other folks, but that's the next step for me.
That was Emma Renly and Matt Zaremba discussing the anthology Poems for Ex-Lovers, Volume 3. You can order a copy of this latest work and prior editions at sockeyepublishing.com. Or you can check one out at the Moab, Utah Library. For KOTO, this is Gavin McGough.
You've been listening to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. Thanks to KBUT's Kate Ganap, KSUT Tribal Radio's Sarah Flower, Nick Burns and Laura Jones of KRCL, and Gavin McGough of KOTO for today's show. Our theme music is Take Me Somewhere by Joel Adam Russell. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks for listening.